Off the Ball, GAA.
Like, they're willing to die for that ball. I said that about Cork for years. They're brilliant hurlers, and I said, when they have that ruthlessness, when you don't have the ball, that this is unbelievable. That now we have a great chance to attack that player that with the ball. Now it's a chance to show Cork people, show myself that, you know, I'm an absolute animal here when I don't have the ball.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Well, where to begin? Where else to begin other than the news that I confidently predicted that there would be no punishment for anything that happened at the weekend? The GAA is now involved in their broadcasters, right? And you can't have good broadcasts without your stars. You don't ban your stars for the big games. How are you going to sell any subscriptions off the back of that? Mm. What? No, I'm obviously not suggesting there's any connection whatsoever between anything there. That's a joke before you start sending angry texts.
But you've said it now. I know. Why were you so kind of confident that...
An Irish solution to an Irish problem?
Yeah.
This is the long-standing tradition of... it wasn't that bad, was it? Mm. You can't be banning Clifford for that, anyway. And also your man rolled over like a sack of spud. And Jim just pushed the lad. Like, you know.
Yeah.
If he decked him, you'd be like, fair enough. Guilty.
Yeah.
Imagine he decked him. I'd say the Dubs will have a...
The Dubs are up in arms.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Is this what's...
Rightly so.
Why is it one route for them and one route for us? Mm. Yeah. And they're correct.
Well, I think the crucial thing here is you'll find that Jim McGuinness did not pull an earpiece out of...
Don't be touching the ears.
And everyone knows that is the line you can't cross. Once you pull an earpiece out, there's no coming back.
Yeah. I mean, like, the news filtered in late afternoon yesterday that... It wasn't included in the referee's report.
People
were like, "Oh, that means he's getting banned."
Well,
he's getting banned.
I mean,
that would be my initial thought.
Yeah. It was like, obviously, that's what everyone thought.
Carte blanche for them to do what they want, or bottle it.
Do you think they bottled it?
Yeah, I think, like, nobody wants them banned, right?
No,
but you kind of feel like you can't be coming on the pitch and pushing players. Because what if the player responded? The player's within his right to respond.
If he shoves them back and sends them flying.
Yeah. Well, he's, you know, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
Tried to bully me on my pitch.
Yeah.
So, like, I'd say the next time Jim pushes somebody on the pitch, what'll happen? You know?
That is the thing now. What is the reference point now? Is the reference point Gerard Brennan? Is the reference point Jim McGuinness?
It has to be Jim McGuinness now. Mm. Precedent on precedent.
Yeah.
So I did see somebody in the comments or somewhere along the line, maybe it was on Twitter, going, Gerard Brennan should just show up now.
Yeah.
I'm
intrigued. What does happen if Gerard Brennan does show up?
Do they drag him out?
Is there another ban? Another ban?
Yeah. Is there a team punishment? But like, there's either the rules mean something or they don't. It turns out they don't when it suits them.
Yeah.
But no one's going to do this again, though, to avoid finding out, surely. Because it was such a big deal at the weekend, it's surely not going to happen again.
You would think so. But at the same time, I'm sure one of the reasons why the ban is so heavy for the likes of Gerard Brennan for what happened there would be to put people off doing it. And yet it still happened. But they've gotten away with it. They are different situations,
they're a bit different, yeah.
They're not that madly different, you know.
They're not. They're in the same field, you know.
Yeah, there's a manager on the pitch when he shouldn't be
interacting, with
raising hands when he shouldn't. Now it was obviously very soft.
Yeah,
but at the same time,
where do you draw the line?
And look, the rationale behind a big suspension is because referees and club games around the country were suffering at the hands of psychopaths. We've all been on. Mm. At matches where there's the local club psychopath who comes on the pitch and it's like, what are you going to do? These have to be stamped out.
I'm not so sure it sets a precedent for anybody coming onto the pitch or management at inter-county level or, you know, questioning where we draw the line. It probably sets more of a precedent for referees to not put it in their match report. Because the key issue with the Gerard Brennan situation was... He dealt with it on the pitch.
With a red card.
With a red card.
Yeah.
Jared Brennan then had to go into the match report and they had to deal with it, and the automatic ban was the 12 weeks. Whereas with the referee not including this in his match report and it basically not existing except for in everyone's TV channels, then there's a get out of jail free card in the sense of, oh, maybe a 12-week ban would be very harsh at this stage of the season, and now we don't have to automatically give it.
Yeah.
So,
but the CCCC frequently can say, here, listen, you didn't see this at the time. We want you to have a look at it now. It's not in your report. So that not being in the report is supposed to be freedom for it to be dealt with properly.
That's what these kind of... So like it's kind of like VAR, and that referees nowadays don't really want to make the decision on the pitch, so they can wait to see if VAR brings it back up. Same with the TMO and rugby as well. You know, the yellow card now with the 20-minute red card, like you don't have to make the decision yourself. You can send it to the box upstairs. Yeah. And they'll deal with it for you. I don't know if that's a good precedent to set.
The key word you used there, Jared, was can, not have. Have to.
No, they don't.
But they can.
Yeah.
So it's a choice. So that's what I mean by, if the referee doesn't report it, the CCC can look at it, but they don't have to give out the ban like they did with Jared Brennan.
They had to ban, Jared had to be banned because he got red carded and the...
Yeah,
that's what that is.
So I think that's probably the key difference.
The CCCC decided that that was grand. Look, no one was watching it anyway. It was behind a paywall. So, the other big news, obviously, that was confirmed: playing senior hurling, All Ireland finals.
What's the hurling thing about?
Playing senior hurling.
I'm sure, he's a footballer.
But senior hurling is the phrase. It's like.
I didn't know that was a thing.
There's one of the junior coalition partners. Seamus Brennan was the minister who went, senior hurling now, lads. One of the coalition partners got outfoxed by wily Fianna Fáil politicians. I don't know if it stood the test of time, if that was the Fianna Fáil government that bankrupted the country, or was it a different Fianna Fáil government? But anyway, senior hurling became this phrase.
That's good, it's good.
Galway footballer lands in Spanish Love Island Villa. It is in Spain, is it? Is that the...
Yeah, in Mallorca or something.
All right.
Yeah, they move it around a good bit. It's been in South Africa a good bit recently.
Yeah, they do the winter one in South Africa, actually.
Yeah.
What's it called? Villa Morris or Villa?
Actually, I don't know.
What?
I have no idea.
Name of the villa.
Morris as in Brosnan or Amores?
Villa Morris.
A terrible name for a villa.
Lamazzi.
No, I don't know.
You're talking about Casa Amor.
Is that what it's called?
Well, Castlemore is the second villa where the bombshells come in, which I believe there's rumoured to be some more Irish coming in as well. Yeah. No, I don't know if there is a name on the... It's just called the villa. Like,
Love Island Villa.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Whatever happened to the good old days of the...
Love House. What would you call the Love Island Villa if you could name it? Let us know in the comments.
Do you remember, was it Fernando's was the nightclub? Right,
Fernando's
they used to
from Take Me Out.
Yeah.
Mm. Was it called Take Me Out? No?
Yeah.
It was called Take Me Out,
wasn't it?
Yeah, Paddy McGuinness,
Where was the Isle of Fernando's?
It was just like a restaurant. It was a restaurant.
Oh.
It was the name of a restaurant, wasn't it?
Well, I think it was just a fancy...
I thought it was like a...
No, yeah, I thought that too, and then I read something recently that it was actually just a restaurant up the road or whatever.
What do you think of... Really off to Love Island here.
Let him at it. You think he's dead, right?
We don't want to spoil the breakfast buffet too much here.
Oh, true, we're going back to it,
We will come back to it, but... I like it. Yeah. I like it.
Eamon McGee's not a fan.
No.
He was speaking on last night's Off the Ball about this, and not a big fan of Love Island is Eamon McGee.
I judge anybody that watches Love Island or any form of that reality TV. I judge them very, very harshly. I wouldn't judge Sean Fitzgerald for... Listen, if I was to pick, and this is in McGee's thing, if I was to pick between playing in a championship football game or going on Love Island, I would pick championship football. But again, Sean Fitzgerald is not in McGee. He does his own thing, so the best of luck to him. But it doesn't mean that I'm not going to judge if Owen Sheehan or Stephen Rochford are watching Love Island. And All the best of them, as it says, I would be picking championship football, but such that's out to teach his own.
What are you judging people on for watching Love Island? What are you thinking? What's the inner monologue saying if I were to tell you that I'm a Love Island fan?
The inner monologue is saying we probably need another hour to discuss this now, but I firmly believe that society started to go on a downward curve once reality TV came in terms of the heroes that we look up to, in terms of what people aspire to be. And I actually blame Keeping Up with the Kardashians for starting that. And Love Island is part of that whole. Love Island is another kind of step or evolution in that whole reality TV thing.
Another spoke in the wheel of the disease that is, The Apprentice is. Oh, it's totally fine, is it? It's no big deal. What's gonna happen here? There's a bit of chaos theory involved in the belief that maybe that is the fall of civilization, but maybe it's mobile phones. Who knows? Interesting. I would also now pay money to watch Eamon McGee, a goggle box of Eamon McGee, Stephen Rochford, Noel Sheehan.
Well, when he brought that up, by episode, what a shout that is. Brought that up, I thought he was going to say, I wouldn't judge Noel Sheehan or Stephen Rochford if they were on Love Island, which I think would be...
Owen's got the six back for it. Yeah. You know, he's been working hard on that baby.
That'd be unbelievable. We'd have to do something. If Owen ended up on Love Island, we'd have to do something serious.
Could he be a bombshell? Is that how that works?
Ooh. That's very good, yeah. Yeah.
A fiery man from Fieries.
We'll come back to it later on, obviously, but on a personal level, he's going to have some... it's mad to say we're going to come back to it.
Obviously, we will come back to it, yeah.
He's going to get some serious personal gain from this regardless. There's going to be no kind of... As far as financial gain, I should say. So...
Well, you make a lot of money off it, do you?
Well, he's going to... His
sponsors and brands post-show.
He's like, his profile is going to be raised something serious, and he's already got a pretty big profile.
Yeah. Like, look at Greg O'Shea.
Yeah.
It was like a good sevens player, but wasn't really known.
Yeah.
Off the back of the show, he's still quite a, you know, well-known guy off the back of it, and he's done pretty well for himself.
Sort of end up being famous for being famous. As opposed to being famous for anything else, really, isn't it? That's the game here.
He's the footballer. He's the football lad.
Mm. And the thing is as well, like, you think about if he does end up coming back.
How long does he last? Is there any possibility he's back before the championship's over?
He could be gone in 2 days.
Like. All right, so back straight to the back of the team.
Or he could be gone for 8 weeks.
Yeah.
So
he'll be celebrating Sam Maguire and Love Island victory at the same time. Yeah, what a time to be a Galwegian.
Well, I don't know if he's the type of lad that would do this based on his social media, but I would love to see a Love Island episode where Fitzing starts explaining the intricacies of the new rules, the square ball rule, the high fielding, how much the two-pointer has changed, the revolutionised GAA football over the last couple of years, to somebody who's looking at him as if there's space and time just floating above his head.
Yeah. I wouldn't say he'd be too worried about any stick he gets when he comes back either, because the nature of what he's already doing, I imagine in the inter-county Gaelic football world, he gets enough stick as it is. So I've good time for it. I wish him all the best. And I'll definitely, contrary to Eamon McGee's advice, I'll definitely keep an eye on it.
So you will be watching. You'll be able to give us blow by blow how Fitzy's getting on.
No, I won't.
Love Island correspondent for Off the Ball Breakfast.
No,
that's me. Like, I've been watching Love Island for 10 years over here.
I finally
get an opportunity to bring to the show.
I don't want to do it. You can do it. That's fine.
Yeah, I've been watching it since 2016.
That's gonna be a nice little.
So you're an expert. If there was a mastermind.
Could you?
Yeah, genuinely, yeah.
Arthur would do Limerick hurling. You'd be doing this.
It genuinely would be up there, yeah.
Oh, okay, right.
Nice. I'm off.
So how does the bombshell thing work?
How does it work?
Yeah. What is it?
So it's just like halfway through the series, they just bring in more people.
Right.
That's literally it.
So a few people get thrown out, a few more come in. Like.
Okay. And what do you get thrown out for?
Oh, you just get voted out, or if you're not in a couple.
Okay.
There's a few different ways to get voted out.
That's going to be our new segment in the weeks prior to the World Cup.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah.
Ah, yeah. I actually remember it was the 2018 World Cup. It like coincided with, it was great because the timing of the games and Love Island would be on like just after. So you'd always just, you just leave it on, you know. It was good.
The winter one?
No, the England, the one that was in Russia.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so 8 years ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Oof. Anyway. 4 years there. Okay. What's next?
We had an Irish press conference this week ahead of Ireland-Qatar. Massive game on Thursday night. sure there's going to be a huge crowd for that. And
I think there'll be a reasonable crowd, won't there? Yeah, like, tickets are available. People will bring.
They're not cheap though. Like, you know, they're not out of. They're, I think they're 40 quid or something, which is in line with what things usually are as far as the football team's concerned. But you get decent crowd. So you get 20 odd thousand. I'd say.
Only 20.
Yeah, you might get 30. I'd say. It wouldn't be a whole lot more than that. To be fair, if the weather keeps up Thursday night, genuinely, as kind of stupid as that sounds, you will get a few more people to.
Yeah, I think there'll be a walk-up crowd. Yeah. Troy is fit to play. That's in the back of the papers today. A bird in the hand.
There is also the fact that they sold out all the season tickets as well, so yeah. People will be doing that to build up their credit for the Euros.
Yeah, it's interesting as well for this. We might get to see Jay Numa in an Irish shirt for the first time. He had to pull out of the first or the last window because Benfica axed his call-up. They wanted him to play for the club instead. And he was speaking in front of the media as well. And he's one to watch. Matthew, I know you probably know a little bit more about him, but he's one that people are really excited about in terms of his future. Yeah,
yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, from what the small bits we've seen him in an Ireland shirt with the under-17s and all that sort of stuff, he definitely looked a level above physically more than anything else. You know, his football ability is obviously there as well, but the main thing when you're stepping up into men's football is that you're able to look after yourself, and he's definitely going to be able to look after himself. Now, he hasn't actually stepped up to men's football in the club scene yet. He was training with the Benfica first team towards the end of the season and then was obviously supposed to be involved in the camp over in Marseille when they played Grenada, but had to withdraw from that one, obviously, because Benfica's youth team were on the verge of not qualifying for the UEFA Youth League, so he had to hang around and play last game or two. I don't know actually know how that ended up. I think they did qualify in the end. I might be wrong. So that's why he wasn't involved there a couple of weeks ago, but will be involved obviously on Thursday, and I think he's heading over to Canada as well. The squad's a bit funny. There's certain players that are only playing in the Qatar game and certain players aren't playing in the Canada game. But yeah, I mean, we've had Tim Clancy on loads who would have kind of brought him into the fold for the first time over with when he was at Cork, and he speaks very highly of him about all the options that he did have when he was.
He's another Ringman Rangers fella. They made another million from Quevin Keller's performances this year, so good time to be involved in the youth setup there.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, and there's loads of examples from that club too. Outside of him, his brother being another one. Obviously, he spoke about him at length in a press conference yesterday. Franco, who's at Portsmouth at the minute, who's suffered heavily with injuries over the last little while, is obviously very talented as well. He's a winger as well.
So. What age is he?
He's only a little bit older. He's maybe 21, I'd say.
All right.
He was at Palace. And
sure, like David and Paddy, David.
Yeah.
Even though he's younger, got there first.
Yeah.
And it turned out Paddy was great too.
Yeah. So there is excitement around this camp, to be fair. As much as it is.
The link with Jose Mourinho at Benfica.
Yeah, well, Jose's obviously the manager. Well, he won't be the manager there for much longer, but I'm sure whatever he did get to pick up off Jose over the last couple of months will be valuable to him. One of those things, I imagine, Jay Newman ends up in a podcast in 10 years' time and he talks about his first interaction with Jose Mourinho or whatever. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens with him, obviously, because I was kind of saying this out in the office there this morning that he is 18 now, which is, it's obviously still young, but in the modern game, it's not all that rare to see someone at 16 or 17 getting men's first team football. So the fact that hasn't happened yet, considering his profile and his ability, is, I would suggest, slightly, I don't know if odd is the right word, but to me anyway, it's a little bit surprising. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him over the course of the summer window, really. Do they get him involved in first team training? Do they send him out on loan in Portugal? Or do they actually take whatever money they might be able to get from him when he comes back a little bit closer to home? You wouldn't know. Closer to home is in England. They won't be coming back to League of Ireland anytime soon.
Go to Holland,
exactly, yeah. And he's the type of player as well that would revel in one of these, you know, over in Spain or something, where maybe, and he is a physical specimen, so he'd be able to handle himself in England even now, I'm sure, but he could dominate in a league like that, you know. So yeah. Hopefully he gets a run.
Benfica puts him in a shop window that he wouldn't naturally be in England as well, so a lot of European clubs could be fishing around the Portuguese league,
or get a loan in Portugal, play a season in their top tier and then see what happens after that.
Yeah.
Obviously, the big talking point around the Ireland football team is whether or not these games against Israel are going to go ahead. Protests outside the Dáil over the last couple of days and growing calls from politicians everywhere except the government parties for the games not to be held, for them to be boycotted. The Ireland captain was asked about this. Have a listen.
What we speak about is hard to say because you need the whole group together, you know what I mean? But if individuals wanted to take a stand, we're not going to stand against it. We're not going to hold them back. You know what I mean? They have they're entitled to their own opinions, and if they're very strong about that, you know, then it's nothing we can stop them about.
That was Nathan Collins, short and sweet.
Yeah, that was the only time he was asked about it as well. The press conference with Nathan Collins felt very much as it was, in the sense of, this is the first time we're speaking to him at the end of the Premier League season. Let's ask him how he is, how the season went, how Keith Andrews was, how he felt he did individually. There's a lighthearted nature to the press conference as well, so you can understand why this didn't supersede the rest of the chat. Like, almost immediately after this, there's no follow-up on the question. And Collins sort of jokes that he almost got out of the press conference alive with easy questions before this one came in. So
yeah,
it's a difficult one to answer for him, but it probably is his duty now as the captain of Ireland to represent the players' views. And if the players' views are, look, the FAI have made this decision for us, then I'm not really sure what else they can do. It shouldn't really be on the players to make this decision. It should be on the association to decide whether or not they feel this is the right game. Yeah, this is the right decision.
Yeah, rest assured, it's going to rumble on. They're going to be asked about it loads more as well. Like, I know it only came towards the end of the press conference yesterday, but it's going to be the forefront of every press conference really for the next while. But I did think it was interesting when obviously he was saying that it was they're just going to have to trust the FAI and trust the government. And then a little while after, I seen on the journal there that Fine Gael's newest TD for Galway West, Sean Kine, was asked about it, and he said that it's a matter for FIFA and doesn't think that the players should be blamed. So essentially Nathan Collins has said, you know, we're going to trust the government and the FAI, and then the government have kind of gone and said, yeah, it's up to FIFA. So I don't know what the right thing is here. It's obviously such a it's a unique kind of conversation, but it's going to be a conversation that's going to be had loads over the next couple of months.
I'd like to just hear what the players think about it, to be honest, as opposed to just hearing what the FAI think about it and the current government stance, to be honest. I know.
Is it possible that the players all think differently? That some of them think this game shouldn't go ahead. Some of them think the game should go ahead. We should beat them. Some of them think there should be a protest. Do you know, like, whether or not they all agree on it is probably unlikely.
I'd say, yeah, you're bang on there.
I'd say it's a strong possibility of that. Yeah, I might be of a slightly different view in that I don't see why Nathan Collins can't just tell us what he thinks. I know he's the captain of the football team, but he's also his own person. I just think it's a real chance for people to stand on the right side of history here, and it's not happening.
Maybe because he's the captain, he can't be his own person anymore. There's a corporate element to the gig, which is different from actually being. You know, and I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm saying, but that's the reality of the situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a difficult place position to be put in, for sure. I just get frustrated listening to those type of press conferences and answers where,
like, nobody thinks the game in an ideal world, nobody thinks the game should go ahead, right? But the reality of the situation is the game will go ahead, barring some intervention from somebody who, as yet, there is no sign of that happening.
Well, this is the issue that is with this game in general, and is with the situation with the Israeli football team, is that it is being pushed onto the individuals to make their choices as if this should be a choice for the individual. Whereas, and this is complicated by the fact that FIFA, back in March, they actually opted not to take action against Israeli teams playing in the West Bank because it's an occupied territory that goes against FIFA's rule book itself. So FIFA were breaking their own rules by allowing Israeli teams, or by allowing Israel to play while occupying a territory that also has teams that are in FIFA. By doing so, they're shoring up that link for this game in the Nations League, because there's actually a protest group that have been bringing forward in front of FIFA, and they were trying to bring it to the Swiss courts to get FIFA's tax exemption in Switzerland removed because they were breaking their own juncture. FIFA have shorn that up by saying they're not going to take action. The court arbitration it went to that as well, and they have sided with FIFA on this decision. So it makes it almost impossible for Ireland to get out of this game off the back of that as well.
Well, there was a Scottish women's team solution. I think it might have been John Fallon or somebody, if I'm wrong about that, was saying that there might be a way out of that, in that the games will be held in the same venue, neutral and behind closed doors. Is that better?
I think that's where Ireland are being punished for the crimes of Israel here, because why should the Irish team have to play a competitive game that means something to them and could have serious complications for them in the World Cup or the European competitions in the future? They have to play this game abroad in a neutral venue without their fans because Israel are breaking FIFA's rules that FIFA should be punishing them for. And Ireland are the ones being punished. So that's where does the fairness of sport come into that?
Yeah, I don't know if there's going to be any fairness in sport out of this.
It's not going to end well regardless.
Is there a world in which Ireland plays the games, wins the games?
Yeah.
Like,
I think there's a world in which that happens, but I don't think that will...
Is there a world in which the tickets get sold and everybody walks out after 10 minutes? And that's a... Like I get the reason for not playing the game. And I understand everybody saying, who is saying that, and I understand people like saying that we can't be in any way involved with this. The repercussions for that, I know, and everybody goes, you're wearing up sporting repercussions versus what's happening, and you can't do that. Like you can't credibly say the sporting repercussions versus the genocide. Like it's not even a conversation. It's just that there will actually be sporting repercussions for the FAI, which they don't have the money or the wiggle room or the bandwidth to deal with. And there's no sign of the government saying, look, protest the game, don't have it, and we'll back you. They'll be up for an Oireachtas committee in 6 months' time going, where'd all the money go? And they'll be getting beaten around by the same cowardly politicians who aren't actually doing anything. So they're trapped between a rock and a hard place, and I understand why they're saying, look, we just have to follow the rules here. But I wonder, is there a world in which we can understand that and at the same time do something meaningful, you know, take the 6 points.
Yeah. It's like,
and protest loudly and vehemently. Don't shake hands. Turn your back on the anthems.
That's like, the women's basketball team did that a few years ago when they were forced to play Israel. They didn't shake their hands. Obviously caused a bit of a stir, but it was a good gesture. Like, they're in a similar situation where they couldn't really, or would have been very difficult to go about not playing the game, but they at least showed that they weren't happy to play the game and they didn't respect their opponents. They did play them really recently. I didn't actually see the game, so I'm not sure if they did the same thing or not, but I just feel like you don't have to call the game off, but it'd be nice to see a certain stance taken. I think two things can happen at once.
Yeah.
And it's, to be fair, it still might. That might
100%
happen.
It could happen, yeah.
I hope it does.
Of course. And there's there's still quite some time to go before the games actually come around as well. There's a lot to happen between now and the autumn.
Mm. It'll definitely be played without Israeli fans in Ireland. I don't see how we make that work. If Netherlands and Birmingham felt that they didn't have enough police presence to deal with Israeli fans coming to their cities, then the Gardaí certainly do not have enough facilities to deal with Israeli fans coming to Ireland and the complications of that.
All right. If anybody else has any views on this, you can get us 0879-180-180 is the WhatsApp number, or you can leave a comment on the YouTube stream. People giving out to us, I think, for not talking about Palace versus Rayo Vallecano.
Yeah, well, I was actually going to jump in there before we moved off the Ireland thing with Paddy McCarthy. Obviously, the news of him and John O'Shea seemingly getting their deals extended or renewed until, you would imagine, the same time period as him, or towards the end of Euro 2028. And Paddy McCarthy, obviously, been heavily involved with Crystal Palace over the last couple of years, and he's going to be part of that team taking on Rayo Vallecano tonight. Probably a wider conversation about English clubs and how well they're doing in Europe. Villa obviously going and winning the Europa League, and Palace now being heavy favourites to go and win the Conference League. Obviously, we saw Chelsea win it last year. We saw West Ham win it before. Man United and Spurs were in the final Europa League last year. Arsenal now as well have every chance of going and winning the Champions League. That's a wider topic, but for the Crystal Palace fans, which I'm sure there are a few in the comments, because there seems to be fans of every club. We do quite well, actually. I think we've a lot of quite an array of different clubs fans. Watching the show on a daily basis, so they will be very excited. And if they do go on and win a European trophy, they're not going to care about the fact that the English clubs tend to be dominating in Europe, or at least getting to the stage where domination is likely. But a great occasion for them. And Rayo Vallecano are a very interesting club as well. They've had a lot of issues around their ownership and the way the club's been ran, because everything is quite old. Their stadium is very old. There hasn't been a lot of investment and all that sort of thing, but they're making things work. And what a story it would be for them. They still do things very old-fashioned. They were selling tickets for their semi-final game. They won the second leg, at their first leg, whatever way it worked out, against Strasbourg at the stadium. People were queuing outside up to the ticket office to buy their tickets. So.
They're obviously a Madrid team.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, one of the other Madrid teams. But it'll be a good occasion. And of course, some good Irish links to Crystal Palace throughout the years. Of course, Damien Delaney was there for quite some time, Clint Morrison. None really there at the minute outside.
Eddie McGoldrick back in the day.
Yeah.
14,708 capacity Campo de Football de Vallecas.
Mm.
Looks proper old school.
They're one of the clubs that you would suggest, based off the back of our kind of Ireland chat there, that would see themselves on the right side of history as far as a lot of that sort of stuff goes. They're very.
Not the club of Franco in Madrid.
No.
The stadium in Spain, though, like some of them are terrible.
Yeah.
Some of them are incredibly decrepit and
probably beyond.
Run down.
Yeah.
But it's funny, some of these clubs. Actually, we spoke about my return to the show, but like when I left the show, I went traveling around Europe in a camper van, and went around Spain, and I did like a stadium hopping type thing where I tried to visit a stadium in all the cities that I went to. And I went to Santander in the north of Spain. Santander used to be a La Liga club.
Racing Santander.
Yeah, but they were second division or third division in Spain when I was there, but they were second division. And one of their fans saw what I was doing, and they DM'd me and said, if you want to tour the stadium, just message me and I'll meet you. And I met him at the gate, and we just went into the stadium.
Yeah.
There, and then I met the chairman. I was in the chairman's office.
It's funny.
This former La Liga club. And I just rolled up, nothing. got to tour around, see the stadium.
Santander's very nice.
Yeah.
It's a lovely city.
I was actually there the other day.
Oh, yeah,
you flew true and back, yeah. There's actually plenty of scarves and jerseys in shop windows and stuff.
Of the club.
I don't know how they're doing now.
Yeah.
I think they're in the second division now.
Yeah. It's funny though, because you mentioned about the stadiums, about how like old, like the crap, whatever. They've probably gone beyond the point of just being kind of authentic and nice and, you know, a trip down memory lane, because some of them are that bad. But I was obviously over in Murcia for the Ireland game. They played Granada the other week, and the game was in Real Murcia's stadium. And my God.
That was nice.
Unbelievable. Yeah. For a team in the third division. I hadn't even actually, to be fair, properly heard of Real Murcia.
They have been a.
And I don't ever remember them being in La Liga. I'm sure they have been at some point if they've got this stadium. But we had a taxi man was driving. We were going to the airport the next day, and he was saying in very broken English that they're terrible. So they are his team, but he doesn't get much joy out of them. But the same, 30,000 seater for a team in the third division, and we look at ourselves here, and you're going to Tala, which is obviously a very good setup, but 10,000 seater for top division here. Different culture, of course, different setup, different infrastructure, but interesting nonetheless.
Quite similar to Malaga. Malaga have this beautiful big stadium, 30,000 seater, and because they were previously in La Liga, they're a huge club, but they went down.
They're way down.
They went way down the pecking order because of finances and stuff, but they still had this amazing stadium. Crystal Palace, by the way, 25th richest club in the world.
Yeah,
and we kind of have been having this conversation for a long time about the Conference League. Mick was making the point last week that he thinks that the League of Ireland teams probably do want those English teams in for prestige and tickets and stuff. I do think, though, that like if they weren't in, you'd have more opportunity to win games, and every point in the Conference League is worth 125 grand or whatever it is for the Irish team. So swings and roundabouts on that, I suspect.
Mildly interesting, before we move off. So Racing Santander are Real Racing Club, supposedly, is the actual Real Racing Club de Santander. And they have finished first in the Segunda division. Is the season over?
It
might be one game left. Might be one game left, I think. 21 teams would be 42 games. They played 41. Sorry, 22 teams. So, yeah, 42 games. One more game left. They're 2 points clear at Deportivo. Deportivo La Coruña, yeah.
What a team, by the way.
Absolute, yeah. You have a look at the rest of the year. Malaga are fourth, so potentially go through the playoffs.
One of the first fake jerseys I received back home from holidays was Deportivo La Coruña jersey, yeah. That 2004 team.
One of the great footballing names. What a name that is. Rolls off the tongue.
We have some rugby to talk about as well.
Yeah.
Want to get into that? Darry, you were out talking to Tyler Blendell yesterday.
Yeah. Off the back of the Champions Cup final loss the weekend, obviously. And Tyler Blendell, who's, of course, the attacking coach at Leinster, has taken a decent bit of flack since that game. Around the lack of kicking game that they had against Bordeaux and the way they set up in the heat of Bilbao. It was 30 degrees on the Saturday, but the stadium, people that were there at the weekend will know, it just retains every bit of heat that's inside it. It's very much, I heard it was described as like a sombrero without the little top of it. So it's just like a straight across. It's essentially a roof with a tiny little hole at the top. And essentially, like, Leinster set up to play a game which was possession heavy, plenty of rucks, not much kicking, and he's obviously taken a good bit of flack off the back of that. So I asked him a few questions about that setup yesterday in Leinster HQ.
You might not be able to say, but what was the overriding kind of feeling in coming out of that review?
Yeah, obviously the first half put us in a bit of a hole, and it was just, why did that happen? We revisited kind of the timeline and what opportunities we had to have a better impact on the game, and how did we go so long without being able to have some positive moments? So we had chances to get the game closer at the end of that first half, and then, yeah, it was a tough one. And then second half, we were a little bit wasteful. We had a lot of entries into the 22 and we didn't take enough of them.
Would you change anything in the attacking setup if you had that game back?
We were really happy with our preparation. We're happy with the players and how they prepared and the plans we had, and we just had to be more accurate. So we got into the 22, you know, say 12 times, and we just weren't efficient or weren't accurate, and then we're not scoring points. I think that's the key. We didn't apply pressure with points because we weren't accurate enough.
A lot of people have talked about maybe the lack of kicking in the hot weather. Do you kind of agree with that assessment, that people thought you might have kicked a bit
more? Yeah, no, I thought we actually moved the ball in hand. We moved from our own end up to the 22-metre line often, you know, 3 or 4 times we had good phases of play, and I just think there was one passage maybe between minute 10 and 20 that was like, could we have won some more of those contestable kicks back, or they were also kicking them? So I don't think there was a lack of kicking. It's just, if you kick it to Bordeaux, they often just thump it back to you and they chase hard. So it's not just one of those easy fix things.
We haven't spoken to you too many times. Can I just ask about your kind of overall attacking philosophy and how you describe your vision? What does the Tyler Blendell attack look like in your mind?
Yeah, I just think we're nice and together with what we're trying to do on the field. We're trying to have multiple options and being able to attack space effectively. So, you know, it's no kind of rocket science. We just want to have really good habits, good skill sets, be able to attack space with our bodies.
And can I just ask, have you found it, you're still a young coach at 35, I believe, have you found it at all difficult the last few days? Kind of, there's been a lot of reaction and commentary around the attack.
Yeah, I mean, I probably haven't read as much as there is out there. It's just, we're so aligned with each other. I think the players, the staff in this building, we're trying our best to get the best performances out there, and we just keep doubling down on our habits and we trust that it's going to come right.
Tyler Blendell there yesterday?
Yeah, and like, as I mentioned, he is only 35 and he's been at Leinster now a couple of years, but he's never really been questioned whatsoever, because over the last while, if there's anything to question about Leinster game, Leinster's setup, it's been the defence. So it's the first time his attack has really come under fire from anyone. And look, it's a tough one, because you're playing the best club side in the world and you come out the wrong side of it, and all of a sudden your attacking philosophy is being questioned.
But I have some sympathy with, like, maybe don't be throwing the intercepts there, lads. And we might, you know, not be butchering the 5-on-3s.
The thing with the intercept is that this is a criticism that's been made, is that Leinster's setup in those formations is extremely predictable at times, especially for a team of Bordeaux's quality, and that intercept was studied. They read the body language of what Harry Byrne was about to do, and Mo Ifeanyi was there to take it.
Yeah.
So it's not just Harry Byrne's fault of, you know, throwing the ball.
Some of it is, though.
He could have, yeah, like he... I think he was tired at that point. If you look at it in slow motion, he doesn't even really look to see where he's throwing it, which is a flaw, obviously.
Yeah.
He got too comfortable there.
The quarterfinal was only a game because they threw three in the first half.
Yeah.
And then I think the point about being in the 22 a lot is like, you know, maybe... I think there's a pie chart of blame.
Mm. Yeah, and, definitely, yeah.
They're all guilty.
Who's the most guilty?
I don't know. I like, knocking on in the first 10 minutes to give a scrum, you know, when your good players are making mistakes, when your world-class players are making mistakes, it's hard to blame the coaches for that. Like,
I do think it was mentioned on Monday Night Rugby by Andy and Jerry, like, I noticed it in the stadium, the extremely long warm-up, and it sounds stupid to mention. They were out, you know, 6 minutes after Bordeaux had finished up, and Bordeaux playing a much more similar, weather than Leinster would do, and they spent 5-6 minutes extra out in the pitch hitting tackle bags and running around the place. They were out there for ages, and it's kind of like certain things like that's a coaching issue.
Do we really think their sports science doesn't know about the weather, that they haven't done any work on that? Like, if it is
simple logic, though, if you're out there in the sun for five more minutes.
Is it simple? Is there no science? If there's no science to it, then yeah, I'd agree with it. But do we really think that, like, this organization that has been, you know, a hallmark of research and hard work and due diligence are so thick that they're totally incapable of going?
I didn't say that.
Hey, it's really hot and sunny.
I didn't say that.
No, but that's the implication is that.
No,
like,
I just think they got it wrong on the day. I'm sure they do that every single game, and that's the criticism, is that they don't change when it comes to finals. They think they can just go out and play their own game, set up the same way. And to an extent, you should. You shouldn't change your game plan too much for a team that you're playing. But it's been the criticism over the last few finals is that they haven't adjusted to the final. And it was no more evident than that the weekend, where they played their possession game, their phase game, hit almost double the amount of rucks that Bordeaux did, and they tired themselves out. And they had nothing left in the second half. And obviously the game was over by then. And Bordeaux did what they did. They conserved their energy, chose when to attack, chose when to hit rooks and counter rook. And they just got on top of them. That was it by halftime. So I think there was a miscalculation on the coach's part in terms of what game they were setting out to play. They probably didn't take the heat and kind of Bordeaux set up into account as much as they probably should. And I think it's a great coaching setup. I actually don't think anyone should be brought in or kicked out. I think they have a really good team there. But I think they're in their own bubble a little bit too much going into that game.
Nobody has any defensive case to make against anything that anybody's saying this week after you get hockey in the final like that. So all they can do is go and win the next competition they're in. They play the Lions on Saturday evening in the URC at 8 o'clock in the Aviva. Tickets are available for that.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Off the Ball.
GAA. Like, they're willing to die for that ball. I said that about Carr for years. They're brilliant hurlers, and I said, when they have that ruthlessness, when you don't have the ball, that this is unbelievable, that now we have a great chance to attack that player that with the ball. Now it's a chance to show Carr people, show myself that, you know, I'm an absolute animal here when I don't have the ball.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.